Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I have with me a very, very accomplished author from the UK, Patricia Lustig. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Patricia is an author of a book titled Strategic Foresight, Learning from the Future. She's also a co-author of a new big book, which is titled New Shoots. She has worked for several companies, including BP, Motorola, and Logica. So Patricia, today we're going to talk only about your books. Tell me about your first book, Strategic Foresight, Learning from the Future.
It's not my first book because I've written books before, co-authored books before, but this is the first one I've written on my own. Mm-hmm. And this is a bit about, I discovered foresight, strategic foresight, because I used to work in organizational change. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't see how you could change an organization without understanding, looking at potential futures and deciding what to do in different cases. You know, it's like making more than just a plan A, because as sure as eggs is eggs, will not turn out as you think. Mm-hmm. And so about almost 30 years ago, I started learning about foresight, and it became clear that there were people who knew about foresight and understood it and could see its value, and people who didn't. And there were an awful lot more people who didn't than the other way around. So the idea was, how could I help people who didn't know what foresight was think about foresight and use it, because using it is valuable to businesses and to individuals. Mm-hmm. So I unpacked at a very good publisher and editor, and I unpacked how you think, because we think that way without, it's kind of an assumption, it becomes a paradigm. Mm-hmm. And futurists think differently, and they have to have a certain amount of weirdness, imagination there. And so the book starts with, how do we think? Examining how we think, examining, you know, whether we, you know, everybody has a different way of looking at time. Sure. Do you spend most of your time in the past? Do you spend it in the present? Not many people do. Mm-hmm. The Dalai Lama does. Mm-hmm. Or do you spend it in the future? And what are the consequences of that? And how can you shift yourself? How can you understand when you need to do that? Mm-hmm. And then it also has some tools that I found exceptionally useful and that I've used with clients and case studies. And hopefully, and I've been told it is so, people can use it in their day job to try to think foresight and maybe even to use some of the tools with their teams.
Interesting. So before I talk, get into strategy, you spoke about being a futurist. Help me understand, how does being a futurist help you craft better strategy?
Well, by thinking about what in the book we call foresight muscles, you have to develop your foresight muscles just like any other muscle. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking about different potential futures and a range, and some of them good and some of them bad. Mm-hmm. First of all, if you think about the things that could happen to get you there, then you might have sort of like road signs to say, early warning signs to say you're going one way or another. But the future muscle comes into thinking about, if that future happens, what do I have to do to be successful in that future? Mm. And you make a series of plans, one for each future. So you have, you know, a plan A, a plan B, a plan C. And then you've got the roadmap to sort of see which way you're going. Mm. You know, oh, I passed the petrol station there, so that means I must be on this future. Mm-hmm. If you follow me. And then that's the plan I need to take into account. And what that does for you is it gives you more opportunities, and it creates advantage for you, because you see things, as Shell did with the oil shock in the 70s, you see things that other people don't.
Amazing. So, Patricia, I think strategy is probably one of the most used words across the entire corporate world. I'd love to understand your perspective of the meaning of strategy.
Okay. And it is not tactics. Mm-hmm. Strategy is what you, so you make a vision of where you want to go, and you make some strategic choices. And the strategic choices are at quite a high level, and they could be around, they're at quite a high level, but they take place in what we would call value space. Mm-hmm. And that is, these are the things that are acceptable and these are the things that are not. So there are things that are automatically not on the board because we don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, when I worked for Motorola, we didn't pay bribes and we didn't pay consultancy facilitation fees because that was one of the things that was within their value space. Mm-hmm. And that helps you decide what are the things you can do. Mm-hmm. With the strategic map, if you will, is quite broad still, about, you know, we're going for this, these are the things that are important. And when you get to tactics, it's getting into more of your road mapping. Sure. We're going to do this, and this. And a lot of people mistake the two.
I agree with you. So, you know, when you were writing your book, I'm sure you must have researched it and spoken to lots of people, and you worked for several large corporations. In a global world, what is the impact of culture on strategy?
Well, that's, in a sense, that you could see that as value space as well, because cultures are telling us what's okay and what's not okay. And an organizational culture is exactly the same. And an organizational culture is frequently based on those values that we share. And I find, you know, I've lived in many different cultures. English isn't my mother tongue, so I'm also British, but I'm not originally British. Mm-hmm. And I find that it is very valuable to understand that there is different cultures, but I'm not sure how far we can go to understanding another one. We can understand that we don't. We can work really, really hard, but I think it's very few people who can totally and truly understand another culture. Can you hang on a second, just a minute? Sorry.
So the other part of strategy is that different organizations develop strategy differently. And what I mean is that when it's a large global multinational, there's one way of looking at it. When it's a family-owned organization, it's a different way of looking at it. I'd love to get your perspective on what can be different in strategies across different types of cultures and different organizations.
Well, remember that I'm using culture as the values space within which you operate. So that's going to be different for every culture. And that's going to be different as well if you're a big company or a family-owned firm or even a single solo operator. Mm-hmm. But, excuse me again. I'm sorry, he's still doing it. Oh, okay.
So tell me, when you talk strategy, how often should strategy be reviewed?
I think it's an ongoing iterative process. The strategy is absolutely no good if it's filed on a shelf and looked at once every year or once every 5 years. Because what you're doing is you're navigating. It's as if you're a great big ship, and it takes a long time to turn.
Right.
And you need to be checking where you are. Mm. Are we on track? If we're not, do we need to do a little tweak? Do we need to do a big tweak? What do we need to do? Mm. So strategy should be a living document, a living idea.
Okay.
And I think in maybe even most organizations, it isn't.
Okay. My next question to you is, you know, a lot of large consulting companies work with large organizations to develop strategy. My own personal view has for a long time been that the best strategy comes out of its own people. I'd love to understand from you, what is the role a consulting company can play in developing strategy?
I think it's a facilitation role, and I'm absolutely 100% behind you on that. Mm-hmm. Would it be useful to have a case study?
Sure, tell me.
A case study of an organization, a nonprofit I worked with in Bangladesh, and they were called upon by the head office, the international office, to do a five-year strategy. And not only, and the country director wanted to be a bit more participative. I don't think he quite had in mind what I did, but he was thinking rather than just the six people in the management team, let's get a few more people. Because it was strategy and because it was a not-for-profit that had people, that stakeholders, lots of stakeholders, we got people from all the stakeholder groups into the room to create the strategy. There were about 64 people, which was, this is more than 20 years ago. That was really way out there.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing that happens with that is you get a sort of consensus. Mm-hmm. You get a shared vocabulary among all the people. They wrote the five-year strategy and they sent it off to headquarters, and it was the only one that was accepted without anything changing. But before it had left their office, people were already implementing it because they knew what it was about. They understood the context. They knew what they all had agreed they wanted to do.
Interesting. And if you look at strategy, you know, strategy has multiple components. I mean, there's an overall strategy for the entire organization. There are digital strategies, brand strategies, people strategies, technology strategies, et cetera, et cetera. How does an organization pull together a lot of these strategies? Because you're saying, coming back to what you said in the beginning about foresight and being a futurist, how does the person who's responsible for strategy bring all these different kind of thinkings, visions, directions, all to point in one direction and pull in one direction?
Well, I've just told you, you have to include everyone or representatives from all your stakeholder groups in the development of the strategy, because you can't take your people strategy and then push that into your big strategy. It has to go the other way around. If everybody understands the direction, where we're going, and they've understood the context, because that's really important, and the why we've decided to go that way, then it's easy for them to do a people strategy based on that in support of it.
Okay.
But the other way around, you can't just, that won't work.
Sure. One more question on strategy before I move to your second book or your next book. A lot of my viewers and listeners are startup entrepreneurs. What would your advice be for a startup to develop a sustainable strategy?
Well, it's the same. And it is really difficult when you're a startup because you have so many things on your plate. But understanding where your, again, your value space within which you operate, understanding that is really important, because that helps you say no to things. It's very hard when you're starting up to say no. You think, God, that's a good client. I want that client. But you may know that that client does something or produces something that is against your values. And then it makes it an easy no. And you're spending your resources, your time, your money, your effort in something that's right for you. And you still have to do it. And you need to set aside time to do it, but it needn't be days and days. It does probably require a few hours a month, however. Once you've got the thing going, and then it needs to be updated.
Wonderful. So, Patricia, I'm going to move to your next book or your new latest book, New Shoots. Tell me a little bit about your book and what was your hypothesis?
Well, it's much the same as the previous book in the sense that I think the world is in great need of good decisions, and decisions that are good now and good in the future. And if you don't think about the future, you're not going to get decisions that are good for the future. You're only going to get decisions that are arguably, possibly good for now. And my co-author, Jill Ringland, and I, we are both at the stage that we want to leave a legacy. We want to make it easy for people to make better decisions. So what we did is we started doing the research for this book called New Shoots, and that was looking at a range of trends that were everywhere, so they were kind of worldwide trends, and explaining them to people. And we finished the book in the beginning of 2020, and COVID hit. And then we had you know, we went down, we had to rewrite everything. And we decided that actually we were looking at something different, because there is an awful lot of good things, many, many good things happening. Mm-hmm. And what we see and hear is doom and gloom, because that's what sells newspapers and that's what sells media and gets clicks. But New Shoots is explaining how these trends unfolded, mm-hmm. having a look at what the disruptors are, and then thinking through a little bit how they could affect that trend, and then going around the world to find what we call snapshots, tiny little case studies of people making fresh choices in a changing world. So actually doing this stuff, not because you want to copy that person, mm-hmm. but maybe looking at a range of them gives you something that you could make your own, because mm-hmm. it's going to be different wherever you are. And we wrote it for millennials and Generation Z. So mm-hmm. it's very different to our previous books, which had originally been relatively academic, and strategic foresight is very much for business people, organizational people. Mm. But this is for individuals, and it's a story, and it's easy to read, and it's fun. Mm-hmm. And that was the point behind doing it.
Okay. And what are some of the disruptors that you have identified?
Well, I mean, the one that's in everybody's mind is COVID and how it's going to play out. And in particular, the fact that it plays out differently, not only in every country, but in every region. Where you are in a country is different. And there's so many things that depend upon that. But, you know, for instance, in energy choices, the way we use energy and the way we, in the type of energy that we use is a choice. And one of the disruptors is, how strong is public opinion? You know, you saw COP26 and everybody was, oh yes, we're, you know, climate change and we need to do, and mm-hmm. and then, and they all signed up and now they're all backing off. Now, how strong is the public opinion going to be to mm-hmm. push politicians to mm-hmm. do something? Mm-hmm. So that's another disruptor.
Interesting. And do you see technology, which has suddenly got a very, very high amount of use because of the 2 years we've had in lockdown. Do you see technology as being a major disruptor going forward?
Different bits of it, yes, because it's technology is very wide and it mm-hmm. can be anything. I think the biggest trend that we see is, the most surprising one, I think, is mm-hmm. biotechnology. And we've seen it with the mRNA vaccines. Mm-hmm. People are still talking about artificial intelligence. And yes, that is something. And there are choices that need to be made, mm-hmm. bearing in mind that technology is never good or bad. It's how it's used that's good or bad.
Mm. Okay.
And considering unintended consequences.
Sure. So I've got time for a couple of questions for you personally, because my viewers and listeners love to get to know my guest a little more. My first question to you is, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
That's, I suppose there came a point in my career that I changed from a sort of engineering technical background mm-hmm. into working with change. And then I moved to Nepal. That was a big one, because I learned an awful lot. Mm-hmm. And I was by that time doing organizational change and what's called institutional capacity building. But mm-hmm. I also have never done a job where I didn't want to know what was happening on the coalface. Mm-hmm. So I worked with colleagues in rural development, and which I do speak Nepali, so I can. Mm-hmm. And it's just an eye opener. Mm. It's really an eye opener. And I suppose that the third one is when I've always thought I was a writer, and I've written all my life, and I've written lots of articles and even peer-reviewed articles. And it's when I decided to write a book with two colleagues, because writing a book is the first time is quite a big deal. And we were commissioned by Wiley to do that.
Wonderful. So time for one more question. And this question is for the many, many people who hear our conversation. as a corporate leader in so many companies, as an author, as someone who writes on strategy, on foresight, what would your advice be to a young individual who's starting off on her or his journey in the corporate world?
I think the advice is endless curiosity. Be curious, ask questions, ask open questions, because that's really important. It's very hard when you're young to admit that you don't understand, but if you can do that, do it, because you will find, if you say, sorry, could you explain that? That wasn't quite clear to me. Then an awful lot of other people are thinking that, but they don't dare say it. So I suppose courage with your curiosity is a good thing.
Well said. Patricia, on that note, I just want to say thank you so much for talking to me. Thank you for talking to me about both your books, about on strategic foresight, talking to me about how being a futurist helps in developing your own strategy. Also talking to me about your new book, which is New Shoots. And I'm sure a lot of my viewers and listeners will go and check out your new book on Amazon. I certainly will. So thank you again and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.